This is Embracing Change with Lakrita Bowman and Jennifer Osborne.
Hello, welcome back to episode 3 of the Embracing Change podcast. We're in season 8, and we are talking about messages that Lakrita has delivered. Actually, not just talking about, you are actually getting an opportunity to hear the messages. And the one you're going to hear today is from the Restore Community Summit that was back in 2019.
Matter of fact, the messages you heard prior to, it was back-to-back. I did Monday night and then turned around and did Tuesday morning in that setting. So I had to speak in one setting on Monday night and turn around Tuesday morning and speak in another setting. And the night before, I also wasn't feeling good. That was another thing, the reason they prayed, because I was having some kind of digestive. And then that night was the night going into the next morning to speak at the Duke Center. In this event, I had really had a hard night. I remember that like it was yesterday. It was a very hard night. And I remember not being able to sleep very well because my stomach was, I was in pain. And I just kept saying, I wonder if I need to cancel, but I pushed through. And so hopefully you'll hear that in this message, because sometimes your assignments, what I've learned is that your assignments are necessary for you to show up. In this particular setting, I got a chance to speak to all the people working in social services for reentry for people coming out of prison. And because, of course, my story is one that I spent 5 different times in prison over a time of 17 and a half years. It was really important for me to share my journey and why it's important and how grateful I was to see all kind of diverse individuals come together. Even police officers was there. And so it was just really neat. And so even though the night before was really crucial for me physically, it was almost like I stood on that stage and totally forgot the pain I was in, because the passion overrode the pain.
Yeah, yeah. So that whole goal, or that whole talk, you were a keynote and you were addressing all kinds of social services. And the main gist, like you said, was to make sure that when someone came out of prison, they were totally supported and had everything that they need to get there. And so your keynote was what? To help them understand how someone coming out of prison, exactly what they needed? Okay.
That was my message.
Awesome. Awesome. So here's the message. We hope you will enjoy it.
First of all, I do want to thank Trina as well, Ms. Jackson. I want to thank the city of Cincinnati, the Hamilton County. I want to thank, you know, first of all, and most of all, the Lord. You know, as I was sitting here and just listening, I remember being a returned citizen to Cincinnati in 1992, and none of these services was present. So it's 27 years ago, I came to Cincinnati by way of Hamilton, Ohio, by way of Kentucky. I did 17 and a half years in prison. I have 5 numbers, and I am telling you that when I see this much services and I see this many people who says, here I am, send me, I'll go. It's just amazing when I see police officers at a table making decisions to help our communities. I say to myself, oh my. Because I just remember in my journey that police officers were not to be trusted. Come on. If you did something crazy, which most of the time I did, you run from them, you avoid them. But what I have seen in the last, I say the last 15 years, is how they have stepped up and said there cannot be people just making these decisions because they have nothing else to do. What is behind those decisions? Today, I want to share with you a little bit about my journey. One of the things that I've been doing is I've been studying a lot, because I believe that being from where I came, I started late. Come on. On Thursday, I'll be 59 years old. And I tell people, when you put those together, it's about being 14. Because you get a chance to redo your life. And so in my life, I've had the opportunity to redo my journey. You read my bio, but see, that just tells a glimpse of the pain and the trauma that I went through. I realized that looking at when they see us, come on. I thank God for Oprah Winfrey, and I thank God for Ava DeVar, and I thank you for the fact that what that gave me was some insight. And in 1989, when that was happening to those five men, I was on my way back to prison for the fifth time. And see, what I realized is that that trauma, that trajectory of their lives changed their lives forever. The trauma that they experienced. I remember my first experience of trauma when I was 7 years old and my foster mother's boyfriend raped me and then set me up by putting money in my drawer and told my mom that I stole his money. So he would shut me down. Only a broken person in their own selves could think so devious. But see, we don't realize that what we model for other people through pain is what they pick up. He modeled something for me. Manipulation, deception. He modeled what it was like to say, I can't trust adults. I cannot be able to survive this kind of thing unless I protect myself. So out of that moment, I began to like run away from home. And back in the system, when I was about 12, and that would have been in 1972, they didn't have a lot of the stuff that they have now. They just called you a status offense. And they would actually lock you up if you ran away. And I remember a judge getting my case, and they were doing a study at Longview State Hospital. And he decided that I would be a good candidate for that study. And he put me in Longview. And when he put me there, they began to give me Thorazine four times a day, 100 milligrams. I weighed 80 pounds, so I was getting more Thorazine than I weighed. That traumatic experience, that shock treatment, that Thorazine, that they were looking to say, how can they help your behaviors, began to take me in a place that I never wanted to go, because therefore I could not again trust authority. And so those choices that those people made me then began to not see me, because I didn't feel valued. I didn't feel worthy. I did not feel like anyone cared for me. So I went on a trail of stealing, committing all kind of felonies. I have 35 felonies. I won't even tell you how many misdemeanors. Because I believed that I was invincible. What I have come to know, in 1992, I'm gonna say something. I know now that when I was in ORW serving a 3 to 15 year sentence for selling crack cocaine in a school district, when they were making it mandatory, because again, the law was making secessions, the system that we say that we're penetrating and trying to change. I believe that change has come, but I also know that the system was set up to do what it does. And we have to show up to make the difference. And so with doing that sentence for me, I can remember being in ORW, and for the first time, I heard this still small voice, come on. And I heard it, and it sounded like me. So I thought maybe I was finally having some residual effects from the Thorazine years after, because I believed that I was hearing voices. And this is what it said. It said, you will never come, you'll never have definition of meaning till you come back to the source. And I'm like, now, I've always thought that I was the source. Come on now. Because I'm invincible. I can do whatever I want to. Nobody's ever going to hurt me because I'm going to protect myself. I'm going to take care of me because I trust nobody. Everybody is my enemy. But what I realized that voice saying to me was that until I realized what the source was, which I know now first is Christ, but I had to also, see, I don't want to make religion some real easy thing here, because a relationship with Christ, you still got to do some footwork. So when I had to look at that situation in ORW, in Marysville, on that circle, walking in the same place, getting nowhere, for the first time after hearing that voice, I saw the barbed wire. Now, the barbed wire had always been there. Why didn't I see it? Because I was getting ready to go through a metamorphosis, a transformational change within myself. And when I saw that barbed wire for the first time, at least it felt like the first time, I didn't just see the barbed wire. I saw this little girl that was 5 years old that realized that her mother had given her away, lost her identity. I saw that 7-year-old little girl that was raped and sexually abused and lied on by a broken man. And I saw that 12-year-old little girl that was put in the mental hospital and left there when only supposed to stay for 30 days, end up there for 27 months. I saw all of them, and they were me. And I said, what is the source? And I am telling you, life began to line up. God began to line it up for me. I know now it was him. But I am telling you, I had a 3 to 15 year sentence. In 10 months, out of nowhere, miraculously, Judge Norble Nadel gave me super shock probation when I was disqualified. Why was I disqualified? Because back in 1992, when they created Super Shock Probation, it was for first offenders. And I was definitely not a first offender. But I know today, the Lord saw me as a first offender because I was about to take responsibility. Come on now. For the choices that I made. I was not responsible for my mother giving me away. And I was not responsible for the man who raped me. And I was not responsible for the judge who put me in the mental hospital. But I was responsible for the choices I had made based on those experiences. And so that day and that moment when he gave me probation, I knew I wanted to change, but didn't really know how. And I remember going to my probation officer and saying to her, I need help. Who's going to help me? And she looked at me and she said, what do you need help with? And I said, not to go back to prison. And she looked at me and she's like, well, I don't really know what to do. So she called her supervisor in and they had a program here in Cincinnati called Talbert House. But Talbert House was not the kind of program it may be today, 27 years ago. You had to be court ordered into that program. You couldn't just walk off the street and say, I need help. So when that probation officer went to her supervisor, they in turn went to the judge and said, she wants to get in a program. And they said to me, before we could get you into Talbert House, you must first go back into incarceration. Talbert House only takes them from jail. And I remember looking at them and saying, at this point, there's a difference between doing time and spending time. And so if that's what I gotta do to get what I gotta need, then send me on. I'm ready. I spent 6 weeks in the county jail waiting on a bed. And on September 28th, 1992, I went to Talbert House. And I am telling you guys, the resources that they had was minimum to what they have today. I remember having to put the footwork in to find me a counselor to deal with that young little girl that had been running my life. See, that child that runs a grown-up's life has no tools to be able to make those kind of decisions. But that pain was pushing her to believe she could. So I had to face her, sit her down in a chair, talk to her, and let her know that somebody else needed to take the wheel. And as I began to confront her with love and thank her, come on, for helping me survive some of the most traumatic situations, I thanked her. But I realized that she needed to grow up and that she was me. And I am telling you, through that, getting connected with a pastor that's gone, Pastor Harris, who was my pastor in Hamilton and the Sarah program, getting connected to Christ Emmanuel and going to catechism classes, going to NA and AA. Because see, even if I wasn't a drug addict, I was an addict. Because addiction don't just run with drugs. They run with incarceration too. Institutionalization. Because some of us don't like to take the responsibility that it's going to take in order to be free. So I had to do whatever I needed to do in order to get what I needed to have. And I am still doing it. I now do it in a way that I help other people. Because see, what I realize is that God does not deliver you from you and stuff to let you just sit on the back burner in a chair and do nothing. He's got a plan. And his plan for me was way before I took my first breath. It was already tied up in a bowl and waiting for me to show up. I made decisions that got me in the situations that I got in. So I had to take the same choices and found the same route to freedom as I did to incarceration. We have the power. We just have to learn how to reverse it to make it work for us. I remember when the Lord gave me the vision of having the courage to change and showed me that he wanted me to go back into the darkness, into the incarceration, into the traumatic experiences, and help other people find the light. I asked him, what qualifies me? And he said, I do. And he has been qualifying me ever since. I've been doing this work for 20 years. I started with 5 women in my home with my husband. We now serve over 50 women in one location and 50 men in another. We are making a difference. We are making disciples. We are loving people, not numbers. Come on. Because in prison, you're not a name. That's why my name is real important to me. Because in prison, you don't get a name. You get 2801. You get a number. And every time they identify you, they identify you with that number. They don't call you by name. And it took me a long time. Not only what they talk about when they see us, I had to learn how to see me. Then I had to learn how to love me. Then I had to learn how to respect me. Then I had to learn how to make sure that me didn't do what was needed anymore to put me back in that cage. I had to take responsibility for that. And I have been doing that through the ministry that I serve, that I founded, that I work with. I am telling you, the men and women that I serve, they help me keep wanting to change. Because change is a continuation. You never get to grow into a place and sit still. I don't care what your age, what your gender, what your color. If you do, then you're the one who lose out. So I encourage all of us who are helpers in this place, who are those who are coming in to a new revelation. I am here to tell you, you can change. And people can help you. But you have to have the courage and the humility to ask for what you need. Let's quit fronting about who we are. Take responsibility for the choices we make, even though we can't take the responsibility for the choices other people make. Again, thank you for letting me share, because this continues to let me grow in my journey of courage and change. Thank you.
Hi, guys. Every week we get the honor of spending time with you, sharing our hearts and offering insights into all the ways we get turned around as people, and hopefully showing an escape route to better choices. Another place that is offering the same type of path for better opportunities is City Gospel Mission. Since 1924, they've been a beacon of hope to the homeless, those recovering from life-controlling issues, youth, and to those needing job services. If you'd like to volunteer or donate, you can visit www.citygospelmission.org. That is www.citygospelmission.org. Thanks. You've been listening to the Embracing Change podcast. Music production and mastering by Gone Coastal Productions. Podcast editing and production by Jennifer Osborne. Podcast copyright 2021 by LaCreta Bowman.